Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, let's learn a bit more about the newest Seahawks. And I'm not just talking about the three that Seattle chose in this year's draft. Right now, joining us is Michael Bumpus, host of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show and former Hawks wide receiver. He's on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. And Bump, not to get sidetracked, but DJ tells me that you are in a pretty good spot right now. You are outside watching some soccer?
I am outside. Just got done watching my son playing his soccer game. Aww. Now I'm watching my two littles swim around in the pool.
Cute.
The pool ain't for me, so I'm just sitting back chilling.
Why do I feel like every time we talk to you, every Friday, you're getting that weekend started early? Last time you were golfing. This time you're hanging out with the family. It's like the best situation. All right. So let's go ahead and get started.
I'm a blessed man.
No doubt. Let's go ahead and get started talking about some of these undrafted rookies the Seahawks have signed. Are there one or two names that you are keeping an eye on?
Yeah. So the first one, like, is Weddington. I actually coached against him when he was at Sumner High School, and he was primarily a running back, but the kid is special when the ball is in his hands. You saw him at Stanford. You look at his body, his build, he's a receiver, but he looks like a running back. You know, he's kind of like a hybrid. He can go down. I feel like if he were to make the team, he'd have to be able to run down and make some tackles. Ball is in his hand, the guy can get moving. The other guy I like is the kid from FSU, Terry. 6'3", 205 pounds. He's a vertical threat. I know when he was at FSU, they were comparing him to Randy Moss. Kind of big shoes to fill. I wouldn't go quite that far, but he has the same type of game. Likes to go up top. Will go grab the ball out the air. And then he's good when it comes to the screens situation as well. Those two guys I'm looking at. I mean, that receiver room is thick right now. It's talented. And that's what you want. Those are the guys who are going to be asked to make plays in this offense going across the field. Taking screens, making something out of nothing. And when you pop on the film of these two young men, that's what I see. And not to mention Cade Johnson out of South Dakota. Hand-eye coordination is crazy. I've seen him make a bunch of tremendous catches. His routes are good as well. There's going to be a lot of competition when it comes to the WR position.
Yeah, well, and that's what I was going to ask you, Bump, is like I look at this situation right now when it comes to the receiver position, and it's, you know, everybody talks about John Ursua, and we've talked an awful lot about Freddie Swain this offseason as well, you being very high on him, but both of those guys are going to be in the fight of their lives with those three coming in looking to secure a job.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of competition, man, and I like Freddie, you know, and I like John Ursua. But you know how this league is, man. There's always some young fella who's the next best thing trying to take your job. And these guys just have to get used to that. When you're not drafted high, when you are a free agent pickup, or you're a guy drafted late in the draft, that's something you're going to have to deal with every single year until you kind of prove yourself to the league and to these owners and coaches that I can be an every down type of guy. I can be an every week type of guy. Competition is good. Unfortunately, you're going to lose one or two ballers. And I firmly believe that if Freddie Swain or Jonah Sewell were not to make this team, they'd get a shot somewhere else. But that's just how the league is, man. You make sure you're available, and you take advantage of every single opportunity that you get. This training camp is going to be huge for Freddie and John.
Now, talking about that competition, you know, one of the things that Pete and John have talked about, and John Schneider had mentioned on with Danny and Gallant the other day, saying, hey, we need to get back to the truth and the essence of what our program is about, and we weren't able to do that for many years, essentially, when we had so many established starters, so many elite starters. It's interesting to hear him say that, because it's been year four since that turn from the Legion of Boom and that era, but really saying that guys like Dwayne Eskridge and Trey Brown, they love those guys because of not only the physical style of play that they bring to the table, but the mentality that they bring. Is that something that you see that's been a missing piece to this roster?
Yeah, I do, Jake, man. I see it when it's third and 15, you know, when it's third and short, the grit. You want guys who are going to make the play regardless of what's happening. So where it seems like the OC or the DC the last couple of years will have to dial up just the perfect situation. At times, for you to be successful as a coach, as an offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, you got to call the wrong play, and your boys are just going to make it work for you. You know, there are times when you make a call, you look at the box, you're like, look, this shouldn't work, but our guys are just better than their guys, so they're just going to make it happen. And I think we've kind of been missing that. We're kind of getting back. You see DK make some plays on fourth down. Of course, Russell doing his thing, Lockett doing his thing. So there have been flashes of it, but there's consistency. Like I said, these ball players have to make this offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator look like geniuses at times. That's what they're missing, in making the tough play. There have been tough plays, but now you need guys who you don't expect to make the tough play to make the tough play. You need a guy like Eskridge, a rookie, to come in and make a big play. You need a rookie like even Cody Barton to step in and fill in for KJ Wright if he's not here, or even if he is here, to step up and make the play. You're only as strong as your weakest link. I know that's a cliche, but in football, you got 53 guys on your roster. You're really dependent on about 40 of them when you put in the special teams. Everybody needs to be able to step up in pressure situations and make those plays. And it seems like they're assembling a roster of guys with the personality to do that.
The Seahawks had obviously just three draft picks in this year's class, but I think Jake and I have been talking about, well, what if they didn't really need a ton of talent to bring in? What they really needed was to just find a way to best use the talent they have, find a way to best out-scheme or outplay other teams. It feels like they have the pieces. When you look at this team, is that kind of what you see? Do you see a team that doesn't necessarily need a ton of new talent? They just kind of need to put it all together?
I think not a ton of new talent, but you always need more talent. They're never going to look at the roster and be completely satisfied and say, you know what, we don't need to do anything. We're just going to mail it in. But then you also need fresh eyes. That's why I love the Shane Waldron pickup, because he has fresh eyes. He's played against the Seahawks the past few years. He knows what they like to do, strong where they're weak, and where he thinks he can contribute to make this team even better. It's the perfect storm, right? You need your guys to be healthy. You need the rookies to not perform like rookies. You need your veterans to continue to be the ballers that they are. And then you need a coach who understands the personality of their team, the attributes of each player, and put them in positions to be successful. And then when you can't put them in position, the talent needs to overcome the coaching and just make things happen.
Bump, one of the interesting storylines throughout this offseason has actually been a recent controversy over players' workouts, not being with the team, working out on their own, and if they get injured away from the facility, that teams are not going to be obligated to have to pay them. What is your take on the situation that we've seen unfold in the NFL memo to players stating that?
Jake, Stacey, if it was just me and you, we can have a real candid conversation. I can use any language that I want to, but since this is a family-friendly show, I'm going to keep it PC and just say, man, let the guys do whatever they want to do. How prepare the best? You know, people prepare for the season differently. Some guys like being around the team all the time and being in the building, especially those young guys. Some veterans have been there and done that and know exactly what they need. Like their trainers. They like this certain environment. And what I don't like is that the NFL is kind of butting their head in this and sending out memos and saying, look, don't pay guys if they don't show up for these voluntary workouts, they get hurt here. I mean, just mind your business. Let the organizations run themselves. Or you already have the shield. You already have so much influence on everything else. Let these guys run their organizations the way that they want to. Now, ultimately, it's up to the player. Are you willing to roll the dice? Are you willing to take that chance? Do you trust that your organization will pay you if something were to happen, if you were to get hurt? You know, this is America, right? It's all about choices and decisions. Let everybody do their thing. Let them make their own decisions. Let them make their own choices. But if you do not pay a guy and he gets hurt off campus trying to prepare for his job, it just makes you look like you're just part of that NFL shield that doesn't really care about the player. It's all about control and their image.
I'm going to just switch gears for a second. We haven't had a chance to talk to you. We talk to you every Friday. The Seahawks last week drafted their final player, Stone Forsythe, on day three, so on Saturday. So we haven't had a chance to talk to you about him yet. What do you make of him? What's some of your early takeaways about the Seahawks' newest offensive lineman?
One, I'm just glad he was there. I mean, this guy wasn't supposed to be there. He had a draft grade in between 2, 3, 5. And the fact that he slid that low is good for the Seahawks. And it puts a chip on his shoulder. And you listen to that interview right after he got drafted. He was even confused, like, I don't know why I'm still here, but I'm glad I'm there. So what I see out of the guy, I see a guy who's 6'9". People are worried about the bend in his waist or whatnot. yes, that is a concern, but it's more about just making those edge rushers take the longest route possible to the quarterback. When you are 6'9", you have those long arms. You can do it. And now he's not going to be asked to play right now. You got the legend Dwayne Brown on one side. You got Shell on the other side. He can be spotty. He can come in for a couple of reps, give Dwayne a break during practice when the OG is hurting and doesn't want to practice this week. Let Forsythe get in there and get some reps. I think this is the first time they're going to have a offensive lineman that they can truly develop and not just ask to be thrown in there right now. It worked out with Damian Lewis, but if you could have a guy sit and learn from an all-pro like Dwayne Brown, I think that's the best route to go. I think he's the next guy up, and I think he's going to be a starter for this team here in the future.
Now, Bump, there's been a lot of conversation about K.J. Wright. Are they going to bring him back? Even talk of potentially moving Daryl Taylor around and maybe having him play Sam linebacker if need be. In the process, they're going through a lot in terms of what they want to do personnel-wise. If you had the chance to determine what the personnel was going to be, how they would utilize it, what kind of personnel would you rather see them be in? More of a base type of structure or more of a nickel and dime type of structure?
I think you got to go nickel, just the way that this league is pushing. Now, it all depends on what your division is doing, right? You win your division, you're in the playoffs. So you look at the 49ers, they have a really good tight end in George Kittle. You look at the Rams, they use their tight ends a lot. So when it comes to those two teams, I think you're more of a base team. But now you got to play against the Arizona Cardinals. You know, you look at the rest of the schedule. They're going to play against teams that spread things out. So it's situational. It's hard to say, look, this is the team they should be. I want them to be a team that can adjust to anything. You want to spread it out? No problem. Marquise Blair, you're off the bench. You're the nickel guy. Let's go. You want to play big boy football? No problem. We'll get in our base defense. But the way the league is trending, Jay, you have to think that teams are going to try to spread them out more often, and you have to be able to do that. So, and then it's where are you on the field? You know, you get inside the red zone, the field gets smaller, and you have to adjust. So just being versatile is key, but you have to be able to cover fast guys. That's why you're seeing a bunch of 5'9", 5'10 receivers being drafted, because that's just where the league is going. They want fast guys to stretch the field out. So nickel, they need to be better in, but you always got to have that solid base defense in a 4-3.
Are the shorter corners, you think, is that something Seattle's doing because the guys they would normally want are off the board, or do you think that's also a response to a quicker league?
You know, I think it's a response, and I'm proud of Pete Carroll for that. It's hard to teach an old dog new tricks, and this guy got a new offensive coordinator. He's drafting shorter corners. He's got DJ on the other side who's a smaller corner. I think Pete Carroll is evolving, and he has people in his corner that he trusts to be like, look, this is the identity of the NFL right now. This is what we have to do to keep up. Now, if there was a 6'1", 6'2 corner out there with long arms and looked like Richard Sherman and those guys, I'm sure he would take them. But the fact that he didn't hesitate to go after a smaller guy in Trey Brown lets me know that he sees what's going on in the league and he's not ignoring it. He's not being stubborn. I like the evolution of Pete Carroll.
All right, you guys already know his voice, but he is Michael Bumpus, host of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show, former Seahawks wide receiver, regular voice on 710 ESPN Seattle. Go give him a follow at MichaelBumpus5. If you are not already, you should be. Bump, thanks so much for joining us. Have fun with the family.
Hey, appreciate it. You guys have a good one.
All right, you too. Don't forget, you guys, you can stream your favorite 710 ESPN Seattle shows at home through your smart speaker. And if you don't have one, head to 710sports.com/win now, where you can enter to win one. It's one a day for the month of May. This month, we are giving you 31 chances because, Jake, there's 31 days in May. I don't know if you knew that. Very important. 31 chances to win a 710 ESPN Seattle logoed smart speaker. Head to 710sports.com/win. Win to learn how. It's 12:15. That means it's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down to you, Jake. Did the Seahawks end up landing the steal of the 2021 NFL draft?
Now, with the comment that John Schneider gave to Danny and Gallant yesterday in his interview with them, it makes you feel like maybe they did hear when he said this.
You know, and again, in the Big 12, he had, you know, not to get too much into the stats, but lowest completion percentage against him. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, I think we talked about it in the press conference after. If he's, you know, if he's 6 foot, 6'1", he's a top 10 pick. So knowing the landscape of the draft and where you can acquire people is a huge aspect of what we do. And he, you know, we haven't necessarily gotten away from, you know, big corners, but this guy, you know, he plays big. So we're excited about him.
That's a big statement to make. That's not one that people should brush off to the side. You can either make fun of the comment and say, well, yeah, I mean, if there are a lot of different players out there that if you could expand their arm length, if they could jump just a little bit higher, if they could be a little taller, that they would have been a better prospect. But John Schneider doesn't throw that out willy-nilly. He doesn't throw that out just for fun. He throws that out because he fully believes that that is the case. And if he feels that if Trey Brown, as a corner, his skill set, his ability to play the position is a top 10 level type of talent, that is an exciting proposition, and that really truly makes you feel like, what is the competition really going to be like at the cornerback position? And so we'll see what that ends up turning out to be, what that evaluation is being ends up being. But, you know, John Schneider saying that Trey Brown would have been a top 10 pick had he been 6 feet tall is no small statement whatsoever. Mm.
Second down. Stacy Joe.
DJ Joe. D Joe. Doc Jojo.
Nice. I keep hearing that the Seahawks have been given a linebacker from the International Player Pathway Program. Who is he, and what's that program that we're talking about here?
Okay, so I've seen a couple questions about this since the news that the Seahawks were allocated a player from this program. So the International Player Pathway Program, it is an NFL initiative. It's an NFL official program. It stems from a program that was created a couple years prior and then went on hiatus and came back in 2017, a version of that program. So you probably haven't heard about it a ton if you're a Seahawks fan, because the Seahawks haven't been allocated a player before. This is the first year that they are getting one. There are three other players entering the NFC West. The other three are going to be on offense, two offensive linemen and a tight end. The Seahawks were given a linebacker from Germany. He played a defensive end, but he'll be presumably a linebacker with Seattle. So the qualifications, so that you know the pool of players, players have to be under 24, but a couple years out of high school. They can't have played for a U.S. college. Now, that isn't like completely a 100% rule. For instance, the newest Seahawk, Aaron Donkor, who's from Germany, he is from the program from Germany, he played for a season at Arkansas State. So it's players that like want to play in the NFL. They're part of this program, part of the International Combine, but this is their resource, their recourse to get to the league. So Arkansas State, he was there for just one season. So he does have experience as a football player for the last couple years. His background, though, is in basketball. 26 years old. Linebacker, also an underrated area of need for Seattle. So I'm sure Pete Carroll was very excited to get him in here. Watch for his name in training camp. Aaron Donkor out of Germany.
Third down. Jake, NFL players are upset over a memo that the NFL sent to the players declaring that they will not be paid if they are injured while they are training away from their respective facilities. So what are the players missing here?
Just on its face, it's ridiculous, DJ. It is ridiculous that the NFL is trying to punish players for working out, keeping themselves in shape. But the one thing that the players are missing here is you're taking on the NFL. You are trying to get an exemption for an additional COVID-like season when the NFL is telling players, hey, we can make this work. We can have voluntary OTAs going on right now, and we want people back in the buildings. And when it comes to voluntary OTAs, there were some guys that would be in and out, and it wouldn't really be a big deal, but they would still be a participant for the most part in OTAs. And the reason why the NFL is taking such a hardline stance is that it's not just one or two guys. It's the entire roster. It's the entire team. And they want to see and get things, everything back to normal as much as possible. And this is really on the players' union to negotiate with the NFL that we want to have the same type of exemption because we're not out of the weeds yet entirely. And when it comes to COVID, and we're still across the country, not all on the same level of playing field in terms of being in phase, you know, the same phases here in Washington. We're in phase three here in King County, phase two in Pierce County. Texas is wide open. Just around the country, it's not the same playing field. And so that for that reason, NFL players don't want to show up. They don't want to go to OTAs again this offseason. They showed and proved that they can make it work and have a successful season without having to go through that process and do everything virtual. Yet the NFL wants them there. And if they feel like they can have a functional OTA offseason training activities up and running in their own facilities, they are going to fight the players on this tooth and nail. And I don't see this getting any better anytime soon. And unfortunately, you're probably going to see a few more injuries to players that are unfortunately going to miss out on the opportunity to claim their money. And I don't think the NFL is going to take a different stance on this.
Fourth down. Jake, this is a player that we spent a lot of time last offseason talking about, but not so much this offseason. But what is your expectation for DK Metcalf this year?
As I've said before, in every offseason, his rookie year, when I first saw him at rookie minicamp, I said that this guy is going to be a major contributor right out of the gate. Year two, I said that he was going to be a Pro Bowler. Ended up happening. And I think that in year three, this guy is going to be he's going to solidify himself as a superstar in this league. I expect him to have over 1,500 yards receiving. I expect him to get 10-plus touchdowns yet again. And I think that the efficiency in which he's able to do it, I think, is going to be increased as well. In this offense with Shane Waldron, there are more answers. There's more variety. There's different ways to get in the ball than what you've seen in years past. This offense for the Seahawks were trying to evolve. They were trying to get to that point where they could find mismatches, move him across the board, and they did a pretty good job of that last year, but they got stuck in a rut a season ago in the second half of the season. I don't anticipate that happening. I don't see DK Metcalf's production dropping. I think that he has another outstanding year, and as I said, solidifies himself as a superstar receiver in this league.
Now, Jake, you said that he would be a Pro Bowler last year. He became a Pro Bowler. Do you want to go out on a limb, put it into the universe that he's going to be an All-Pro this year?
Yeah, when I say elite superstar receiver, yeah, I think that he's going to take that next step, and he will be an All-Pro this year.
All right. Coming up next in the timeline, you guys, it's one of the craziest things I've ever seen in sports. It had everyone at work talking about it yesterday. I have to tell you guys about it, too, so don't go anywhere.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
DJ, I'd love to be able to do The Timeline, but I'm not on speaking terms with Jake right now.
Well, can you know? So I guess. Okay. Oh, well, who's this?
DJ, you know, it's a.
Thought I cut your mic.
It's a great
DJ.
Loss, but I mean, I guess we could do it ourselves. I mean, that's
fine. Can do it. I'm just letting you know the bromance between Jake and Curtis continues. DJ constantly ruining the party, but that's fine. Me and Brian will go to the Rainiers game without you guys, and we're gonna have a great time.
Wow. So that just okay. Well, all right.
Speaking of, well, in this case, a softball game. Curtis, and speaking of Curtis found the other day one of the weirdest box scores / sports events I've ever seen. So both of you have already seen this. If you have not noticed it before or not seen it on Twitter, which is exactly what this timeline is bringing you, there was a game between Park Crossing and Lanier. It was a softball game. The final score, 46-45. That's right. 46 runs to 45 runs. Now, the box score is up at AHSAA updates, and it has some of the weirdest stats I've ever seen. For instance, you had 23 walks by one pitcher, 26 by another. The team that scored 45 runs, the losing team, they did it on 5 hits. Jake, it's every time you look at this box score, you see something new.
I think we actually did lose Jake, but I didn't actually cut him on purpose, I promise. But I'm trying to get him back right now.
Okay.
But yeah, Stacey, who's your MVP of this game?
It's a good question. So you know what? I'm going to actually, it's tempting to give it to anyone else. I'm going to give this to the losing pitcher. So Young, what is the last name of one of these players, threw 245 pitches. What is happening? What is happening at this game? It is pure chaos. I don't understand any of it, DJ. It's very weird. I can't stop talking about it. In fact, the rest of our timeline, all softball, baseball related, so I'm going to move to the next one here. The Angels have DFA'd Albert Pujols. We were talking about whether or not you would want to see him with the Mariners. I wouldn't mind it at all. I feel like it would give you someone that you could bring up to the bigs to give you some time if you wanted to send Evan White down to get some work at the Tacoma Rainiers. If you wanted to send more down, whatever you wanted to do, I wouldn't mind seeing it. Text line a little split, though. Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. Some people all for it. Some people saying, look, he hasn't been the player that we think he can be for years. Hasn't hit above 270 since when, DJ? 2014, prior to 2014. Would you want to see him at this level?
I would want to see him as like maybe a hitting coach option. But I get the argument to have him as a stopgap, just so to give Evan White more time. But I don't know. Like he's 41. I guess he could teach the young players some more things. So maybe bring him in for that. But I don't know. I don't think a lot of fans are too keen about bringing him in either. So I'm kind of against it, but I wouldn't be completely opposed to it.
Nor would I. Okay, a couple other stories here. The Mariners have announced they are opening a vaccinated-only section. Capacity for the sections will be 5,000, in addition to the 9,000 allowed in socially distanced sections. So it sounds like this is not something where of the 9,000 people at the stadium, there's going to be now 4,000 that are left to people who are not vaccinated. It sounds like there will be 9,000 allowed, in addition to the 9,000 allowed, bringing the total to closer to 14, there's going to be 5,000 seats available in vaccinated sections. Other Mariners stories here. Catcher Cal Raleigh hit a game-tying two-run home run in the bottom of the 10th for the Rainiers yesterday. Here's the sound.
And this one is swung on and hit in the air to right field, and this is deep. It is back, way back. We are tied. Cal Raleigh with a towering home run to right field. And we are all even in the bottom of the 10th inning. It is 4-4. Another home run from one of the Mariners' big prospects. It is Triple-A debut today. Kelnick's hit two, and now Cal Raleigh with a drive to right field to tie this game up when the Rainiers were down to their last out.
Jake, you're most excited to see Jared Kelnick at the bigs, as is pretty much every Mariners fan I've ever spoken to. But I need to know which prospect outside of Kelnick you are most eager to see this year.
Ooh, I really don't think this is close for me. It's actually Logan Gilbert. I mean, Logan Gilbert is the first of the line of Jerry Dipoto pitchers that he has selected that is supposed to come in and really be contributors for this starting rotation. You talk about Logan Gilbert, Emerson Hancock was the most recent one that they had drafted. And I'm missing one more, DJ. Help me fill in the blank here.
For pitching prospects?
Guys that are further away. Like,
so George
away.
Kirby's probably a year away. He was a 2019 first rounder. Yes, 2020 Kirby. First rounder. Emerson Hancock as well, sixth pick.
Right. So you look at Logan Gilbert, you look at Kirby, and you look at Emerson Hancock. Those are the three guys that Jerry Dipoto really put his fingerprints on. And when you talk about who is going to be a part of the future of this starting rotation, those three guys you are really rooting for and hoping that their development really pans out. I know, you know, Cal Raleigh, Stacey, is the underdog in terms of the names that will probably be up. You know, I know you, Shannon Dreyer, in particular, are very, very excited to see Cal Raleigh, and in regards to the State of the Union of where the catchers are right now and the hitting or lack thereof, I think Raleigh definitely starts to become higher and higher on the list as not only just someone that you're excited to see, but someone that can definitely help the Mariners once he arrives.
Look, no one is like upset when a catcher doesn't have your highest average or isn't your best hitter. Like, it's not really his primary goal, his primary objective. But when everyone else is cooling off, you just want something, right? So I'm eager to see Cal up here as well. Related to Hancock, 2020 first round pick Emerson Hancock went two scoreless innings, struck out three in his first pro start for Everett. Logan Gilbert, by the way, speaking of Jake, the prospect you are also most excited to see, Logan Gilbert, makes his season debut tonight for the Rainiers. The 2021 Seahawks football schedule will be announced May 12th. That is right around the corner, 5 days away. Think you can predict the number of primetime games the Hawks will play? Well, you can make your guess at 710sports.com/win, and you could end up winning a $100 Seahawks Pro Shopped gift card. Now, Jake, I already know that you would probably spend
Stacey,
most...
I know we can't guess. But what would be your prediction?
What would be my prediction? Four. I would guess four games, four primetime games. Oh, we lost Jake again. That's okay, because we're actually coming back here. So we are going to transition here to the Seahawks. Now, there are three Seahawks here, you guys. Three Seahawks that will be making a move to a new position or being used at a new position separate from the one he played in college. Now, we are going to tell you the three position changes that need to succeed for Seattle this year that's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. DJ Wilder on the board. There are three Seahawks position changes that need to succeed if this team wants to succeed this year. They concern three very young players, including two very recent draft picks. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get started with the one most of you already know about, which is Marquise Blair. He was in competition, Jake, to move from safety to nickel last year. Cut number seven, here's Pete Carroll.
Marquise is doing great. He's ready to get back to working, so he should be in great shape, ready to compete. I think you asked about his versatility. You know, if you watch this, you know, he can play both safety spots, and he does play on the slot and nickel. We started the season with him when we were really with great anticipation what we could do with him there in terms of the pressure that he could bring off the edge, the tackles that he could make, as well as the disruptive type of coverage style. He has a unique coverage style that he plays on the slot there when he does. We're wide open with whatever he brings. You know, we're really looking forward to it.
Now, I don't love the phrase of we're wide open with whatever he brings at this stage in time with Marquise Blair. I mean, seriously, Marquise Blair, you've got this talented guy. He can play both safety spots. Well, guess what? You've got a Pro Bowler in Quandre Diggs. You've got an All-Pro and a Pro Bowler in Jamal Adams of last year. So where's he going to play? Well, that's not going to be it, Stacey. Mm-hmm. Well, how about the nickel spot? He wasn't very committed in terms of the nickel spot and you know, saying where he was going to play there. And maybe that's a testament to how well Ugo Amadi has done. But I have to imagine that that's where he is going to try and fit into the equation, is going and playing and trying to win that nickel spot again, that nickel cornerback spot again. And he has to. I mean, you're talking about a high second-round pick, Stacey. Mm-hmm. And he is so incredibly talented. He's one of those players that, depending on how he comes back from his ACL, and it looks like his rehab is going well, and if that is the case, then you've got to find a way to get this guy on the field, or you just wasted a high second-round pick on somebody who hasn't been able to see the field at all. And, you know, it was by choice your rookie year, even though I thought he was your best playmaking safety his rookie season. You know, last year it was due to injury. Year three, something's got to give. Something's got to happen here. And Marquise Blair has the talent and the ability to improve this defense, make it faster, make it physical, and add to the playmaking ability of it. But when Pete says, you know, we'll kind of just see what happens here. I don't love hearing that with Blair. I want to hear more of a plan in regards to where they think he's going to fit in here.
Through a combination of being, first of all, a safety, secondly, a more quiet, reserved guy, and thirdly, a guy that didn't see the field a ton as a rookie, as you explained, Jake, Marquise Blair has kind of slipped under the radar. Make no mistake, though, this is a guy that you took with one of your highest picks in the draft. It would have been your highest pick this year were you to make that same pick, and you also took him before you took DK Metcalf. So this is a guy that you made an investment in your future when you took him. I think one of the highest drafted safeties this team has made outside of, obviously, first-round pick Earl Thomas. You need to get him on the field. Now, the context of the safety situation for Seattle needs to be added here, because I don't believe, I mean, I'm kind of jogging my memory here, I don't believe that the full picture was put together yet. You obviously didn't have Jamal Adams, and I don't know that you had traded yet for Quandre Diggs, or at least didn't have him for a full season. I'll have to jog my memory here. But you didn't know at that point your starting safety duo is Adams and Diggs. You know that now. Problem is, in a team that's had limited draft capital over the last couple of years, you used one of the most kind of invested picks, right? One of the most valuable picks that you could have traded back and yeah. garnered more from on this guy. So it stings knowing weaknesses you have at cornerback, knowing the weaknesses that you've had at your pass rush, knowing the moves you had to make there to shore up some defensive linemen. It stings knowing that you've got kind of an embarrassment of riches at safety. It becomes, therefore, Jake, our first of the three most important position changes that need to succeed. As a pro, what if it forces the Hawks, like you said, to lean more into nickel and add some speed to the defense? So there are some pros and cons to all of these things. And if it works out, these three position changes we're talking about can actually be really good. Let's jump, without further ado, into the next one. You've got last year's third-round pick, Damian Lewis, who excelled at right guard for you this year, making the switch to left guard now that you've acquired Gabe Jackson. Jake, how tough is that switch?
Well, I would say it's an easier switch than it is from tackle to tackle. When you're talking about left tackle to right tackle, or vice versa, it's a harder switch because you're in space. You're more in space, and having to own that space is really difficult for tackles, and it's not an easy transition whatsoever. The guard position, there's somewhat of a correlation there, but you're not having to cover as much space. There's not as much room that you have to work with, making it easier. And I think with Damian Lewis, the thing I don't love about it is he's been a right guard his entire career.
Yeah.
That's what he's been. And he is very comfortable there, and I would love to see him grow and blossom there. But what you have in Gabe Jackson, the addition that you made, is although that Gabe Jackson played left guard his first two seasons in the league, he made that transition and that swap to right guard. And I think that that's really where he feels comfortable, where he is cemented. And you want to give the veteran, the 30-year-old, the guy who feels the most comfortable in where he's at, you want to give it to him, knowing that Damian Lewis, who for a game played center and did it pretty admirably, almost made you feel like he could be a center if he really focused and worked at it. But he's a guy that is flexible. He's young in his career, and much like what Gabe Jackson made the switch in his career early on, they feel like Damian Lewis has that same level of ability and talent and smarts to be able to pull it off. And being next to Dwayne Brown, I think, helps in the equation for Damian Lewis. But that has to work, Stacey. You can't go backwards in this offensive line.
Yep.
You can't make an addition of Gabe Jackson and then tank or torpedo Damian Lewis's his development and his progress, because what we saw a year ago, he had amazing moments and he had a couple bad games in the second half of the season. But this guy has a future Pro Bowl, future All Pro type of talent from what I saw last year, and I really want to see him blossom into that.
The last one is the one I'm potentially most intrigued by because we haven't seen it before. It is the possibility of Daryl Taylor, last year's second round pick, transitioning at times to your Sam backer. Now, assuming you do not bring KJ Wright back, we all know KJ was holding down the Will linebacker spot, transitioned to Sam, I think, a bit the year before last and certainly last season. If he doesn't come back, Cody Barton, your presumed starter there, but you could also see Daryl Taylor there. Jake, how do you feel about that switch?
You know, I actually don't mind it. Having a chance to think on it a little bit more, I really don't mind it. I think that when you're talking about, it really comes down to where you believe Alton Robinson is. Is Alton Robinson a Leo, or is he a five technique defensive end? Because if you really think about it from that perspective, now you're talking about depth. You're talking about Daryl Taylor trying to find a way to get him on the field and to be a regular contributor. You already have Carlos Dunlap. You already have Benson Mayoa that you know are going to be a part of that early rotation. And Daryl Taylor still has a lot to prove here in this second year when he didn't even play his rookie season. So the only two positions that I feel like he could play is that Leo position, or he can play Sam linebacker. And if you feel like you can't find ways or find enough reps for him at that Leo position right now in his career. Maybe he comes back to Leo after Carlos Dunlap and Benson Mayoa are no longer there in Seattle. But I could definitely see him at Sam linebacker playing that Bruce Irvin role and playing it very well, very successfully. I don't think he would be as good of a cover Sam linebacker as, let's say, Michael Kendricks or right. Bruce Irvin was early in his career. But he's a guy that can get after the quarterback and is a physical presence, is a tone setter, a guy who can set the edge. And I think that that's something that you really want if you're Seattle, because you're going to have to play base personnel from time to time within this division.
Coming up next, an item that I think could be the most expensive item ever auctioned off at a sporting event. That is coming your way in NFL headlines in 15 minutes. Before that, though, John Clayton published a column that's getting Twitter all aflutter. That's coming up next.